Gavin Edwards is a guy who worked at Rolling Stone magazine for many years, writing in the column Rolling Stone Knows, the place where people could write in any question about anything from the world of rock and roll. And if he didn't know the answer, he would find out the answer and put it in the magazine. Now he has compiled some of those into a book called Is Tiny Dancer Really Elton's Little John? Music's Most Enduring Mysteries, Myths, and Rumors Revealed. Gavin, welcome, finally, to the show.
Hello, Paul.
Nice to have you on here.
Nice to be here.
So how many years did you do this for Rolling Stone?
About 3 years. I've been working there for about 10, but there just came a point where I said, you know what, some of these questions need answering, because if I don't know the answer, then I bet nobody else does.
And were you just bombarded with questions, silly and interesting?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Some of them just indignant, things like, why don't you like Lenny Kravitz? But there were plenty of them where just like, wow, that's a good question. The one that always sort of set my ears back was somebody wrote in and said, I heard Pink Floyd tried to make an entire album just using household objects. And I said, well, that can't be right. But when I went to check it out, sure enough, after Dark Side of the Moon, they said, we have no idea what to do next. Let's get some brooms and some adhesive tape and see if we can make music out of it.
How successful was that?
They spent a couple of months screwing around, and I think they enjoyed themselves. And then they put it away, and they went ahead and made Wish You Were Here instead.
Which kind of was a big hit for them, and probably better than, household objects as an idea. By the way, that answers the question, are there a lot of drugs and alcohol used in rock and roll? Which is one of the many topics, that and sex and other things that keep coming back up through the stories you have on here. And I'm just going to ask you some of the questions that you may or may not have in the book, and then we'll open up the phone lines because people may have heard urban legends of their own.
Sure. And I won't know them all, but I'll know a lot of them, so let's see what we can do.
Well, let's start with the title question. Is Tiny Dancer really Elton's Little John?
I actually, I got a letter early on from somebody saying, I think Elton's the song he's singing to, below the waist. And so I managed to track down Bernie Taupin, who, of course, writes all of the words for Elton John. And I said, well, is that so? And he laughed and laughed and said, I would never belittle myself so.
I would never write a song about that.
Well, no, just he wouldn't say it was tiny.
I see.
So he said, it's actually about, sort of the hippie girls when we first came to Los Angeles in the early 70s. He said they were all sort of very lithe, and they would, sew patches on your jeans. They'd take care of you, and then they'd take you home and sleep with you. He said it was the perfect Oedipal complex.
I bet. Okay. Now, while we're talking about song titles, my daughter grew up in a household with lots of Beatles music.
Yep.
I'm a big Beatles fan. My wife's a big Beatles fan. And now my 12-year-old daughter is a Beatles fanatic.
Okay.
I'll ask you this question on her behalf. Norwegian Wood? Question mark.
Well, apparently it was in fashion at the time in London.
What is Norwegian Wood?
It's actually, according to Paul McCartney, it was actually originally cheap pine. You'd see people who had pine up all over the place. And so it was sort of this, Swedish looking thing. So Norwegian sounded better, but the idea is that it's a house with like a lot of wood paneling.
All right. So now my question about that song is, it always sounded to me like in the song, John Lennon wrote the song and he's singing the song, and he meets this young lady and they hit it off and they go back to her place, and he is probably thinking to himself, well, I'm going to be sleeping with her.
Yep.
But at the end of the night, she goes to bed and he sleeps in the bath, and then in the morning she's gone and he lights a fire.
Yes.
Now, I've always wondered, does that mean he burned her place down?
Okay. So you say it was written by John, and John certainly said that. That's one of the few songs. John and Paul, most songs agreed. John wrote this one, Paul wrote this one we wrote together. That's one where they actually each laid claim to it. And Paul's talking about it. Said that he was the one who came up with the title, and he said absolutely from his point of view it was meant to sound like I'm just being reflective looking at the fireplace, but in their world, if a girl didn't sleep with you, you wanted revenge, and they burnt the house down.
So John Lennon's story is that that was what the song ended with. Yes. Burning down the house.
From Paul's perspective, he thinks the song ends with burning down the house, although they deliberately wrote it so you could interpret it either way.
All right. Now, in my generation,
yep,
Roger Daltrey stutters because he's playing a young kid who's part of that mod rocker generation in England.
Yep.
10 years later, Randy Bachman stutters in You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, and I don't know why.
He does that because his brother had a stutter, and he was hoping that if he did this, maybe he could sort of, like, mock him, and it doesn't seem like a good theory to me.
Wait a second. You're telling me the BTO's Bachman Turner Overdrive's best-known song is him making fun of his brother's handicap?
Absolutely. But he sort of said that he did it, you know, sort of like hoping that, you know, like maybe he could get him to stop doing it. And it was just like a goof in the studio. And then their A&R man from the record company says, no, this is a hit. We're releasing this.
All right.
And it comes out, you know, it's sort of number one all over the world, and his brother stopped stuttering.
What?
His brother stopped stuttering. It worked. It's totally cockamamie, but it actually worked.
So the song cured his brother's stuttering. Wow. All right, I'm going to open up the lines here in a moment. If you have a rock and roll urban legend, Gavin may be the one who can clear it up for you. Let me ask one more here, again, about a song title.
Yep.
There was a Fleetwood Mac song called Sarah.
Yep.
I think it was on the Tusk album, sung by Stevie Nicks.
Yes.
Now, I worked in rock radio for a long time before I got into talk radio, and I always heard that she wrote that song after becoming pregnant by some other rock star, and it wasn't Lindsey Buckingham, who had been her boyfriend before Fleetwood Mac, that she'd gotten pregnant by some other rock star and had an abortion, but had named the kid Sarah while it was in the womb.
According to Don Henley, it was him, and that's exactly what happened. And he said that, you know, sort of they had like a really torrid love affair. There's a line in that song, when you build your house, call me. And he said at the time he was building his house, there was a year or so where they were just really hammering tongs, and that's what happened. I actually, on a separate thing, interviewed Lindsey Buckingham last year, and we talked about the famous Rolling Stone photo session where you may recall all five of them are lying in bed together, sort of shot from above.
Yes.
And he said that after that photo was finished, you know, sort of the rest of the band gets up, but he and Stevie, who had broken up at that point, just lay there, like holding on to each other, kind of this intense nonverbal communication. And this goes on for about 10 minutes, and then finally Mick Fleetwood comes over and says, "Guys, you're freaking everyone out."
Steve, you're on the Paul Harris Show. Say hi to Gavin Edwards.
Well, hello there.
Hey, Steve.
Hi there. I heard a different story about the stuttering and the Bachman Turner Overdrive deal. I heard that, and this is a long time ago I heard this, that apparently when they were recording this in the studio, it was freezing, and he accidentally was stuttering because he was cold, and that they liked it so much they made him do it because they thought it was a pretty cool gimmick. I guess there's different urban legends, but...
I actually asked Randy Bachman about it firsthand, and he said it was about his brother, so...
I think we may have to go with his answer on this one, Steve, since actually talked to the guy.
Well, that was going to be my question. Did you get it firsthand?
Yeah.
So we know which one's urban legend.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for calling. Here's Tom.
Yeah, I think it's on the Beatles Abbey Road album, the song Come Together.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it starts out with that...
Yeah,
okay. Well, the rumor's going around that John Lennon's saying, shoot me.
I assume that's just one of those things. When you start getting into sort of the weird Beatles, like backward masking stuff, you can hear just about anything if you listen carefully.
That sounds to me like one of those things where people came up with that after John Lennon had been shot.
Right. Nobody ever said that before that. You know? But it's the same way, you know, he doesn't say, I bury Paul. He says cranberry sauce.
All right. There you go, Tom. Thanks for calling. And by the way, very similar thing happened with Pink Floyd. We mentioned them before, but their Dark Side of the Moon album was said to have been timed to be just the soundtrack to The Wizard of Oz, or to match up with the soundtrack of The Wizard of Oz.
And, you know, and if you play them together, there will be some sort of interesting connections. The best part is, you know, the tornado is going on at the same time as the Great Gig in the Sky, and it seems very cool. But, you know, no one ever came up with this until there were both DVD players and CD players, so you could sort of sync them up and see, oh, there's lots of stuff that goes together. I actually, just as an experiment, tried doing Abbey Road at the same time as Pulp Fiction. And I'm like, hey, look, there's lots of things that connect there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you know, the human brain, it wants to make connections. You know, like you hear a line, it's like, oh, that relates to what's going on the screen. And so it's natural, especially if you've been smoking the funny stuff, that you say, wow, it's cosmic.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting that you mentioned the combination of the CD and the DVD, because nobody said that about Dark Side of the Moon in 1973 when the album came out, and nobody said it for probably 20 years until Wizard of Oz was on DVD and Dark Side of the Moon had been on CD for a while.
Yeah, and you can sort of put them together. And late night, obviously, some college sophomore got the idea what would happen if, and, you know, their minds got blown, and then it became a cult thing.
Dan?
Hi there. A few years ago, Elvis is supposed to have made some racist comments about blacks, say something about some stupidity about them not shining their shoes. But as I read, Jet Magazine couldn't find the origin of these comments. Do you know anything about it? Did he say this?
The line is something to the effect of Elvis said, you know, the only thing a black man can do for me is buy my records and shine my shoes. Actually, at the time, this was a rumor back in, I believe, the 50s, and Jet did actually research it, and nobody around Elvis or no one reputable backed it up. It seems to have just been one of these like nasty stories that got attached to him but doesn't have any basis in fact.
There are a couple of things as I was browsing through the book, Gavin, that really caught my attention, and one of them is a story about John Mayer seeing music as colors. Now, I didn't understand it, so you got to explain it to me.
Okay, there's something called synthesia, you would look at a square and say, well, it looks kind of angular, and it's always, you perceive the shape of it. There are people who have this who would perceive every single time they see a square, they're going to think of it as a light blue, or they're going to think squares smell cinnamon. This happens with letters and numbers, where someone thinks, I see the number 8 and I think of lemon. And it's not just fanciful, it's the way they perceive these things. John Mayer, this happens to him with music. So he'll hear music and he'll actually be seeing overlays of colors that go along with it.
Does he, if he listens to the same song twice, does he see the same colors in the same point?
Yeah. I went through the songs on his debut album with him and said, all right, what color is this? What color is this? And he said that, a lot of rock music is just kind of like a muddy brown to him. The music he really likes plays with the whole paint box.
Isn't that ironic that everybody else's music just is kind of one boring color, but his is really exciting and pastel-like?
Well, the other guy pointed to that he really liked Dave Matthews' music in terms of like how he saw the colors. They felt like that was somebody who was playing with a lot of different types of instrumentation that made him perceive it in a better way.
Gavin Edwards was the editor of Rolling Stone, who wrote their Rolling Stone Knows column for several years. It was a column full of questions from readers who wanted to know this or that about myths and mysteries and urban legends from rock history. And he compiled some of them into a brand new book called Is Tiny Dancer Really Elton's Little John? One of the things that's always been interesting to me through the years is how rock and roll is never about good spelling. there are some who claim the Beatles' name was a bad misspelling, but of course they were doing it as a pun with beat.
The A replacing the second E. The crickets as well, the chirping crickets of Buddy Holly.
Exactly. But what is it with guys, like right here in St. Louis, with Nelly? You know, it's hot in the hair.
Right.
With two R's.
The double R's and Chingy right there. I asked Chingy about that, and he said, it's just like the local accents, the way we talk. He tried to actually say it like right there, the way that I might hear on the East Coast. And he said, I can't do it. It just sounds funny in my mouth. So he feels comfortable saying right there.
So he says right there is the St. Louis accent.
That's what he said.
Gee, I've lived here for several years. I've never noticed that before.
Different neighborhood, maybe. What do I tell you?
Well, that's certainly entirely possible. Lee, say hi to Gavin Edwards.
Gavin, how you doing?
Hey, Lee.
I got a question for you. I've heard throughout the years, I'm 48 years old, so I grew up with the Beatles and the Monkees and all them.
Sure.
And I've always heard, but I really didn't want to believe, that Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was referring to LSD. Is that correct?
I believe that is not correct. It's a weird coincidence. Julian Lennon came home from school one day and showed Dad a picture entitled Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And John was very taken with this and wrote a song around it. And that was what he always said. And then, some years later when Julian got famous, people said, hey, there's a story about you. He said, absolutely true. I drew that picture. And he sure wasn't thinking of that. He was just, 6 years old. So.
I see.
Of course, it adds to the Beatle legend that Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds would have LSD as its initials.
Right. Now, at what point did the Beatles not know that until it was released? Did somebody point it out in the studio and they thought it was a good joke? Is it something John picked up on right away? That I don't know.
Of course, if it were really Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds in terms of initials, it would be LITSWD. So it doesn't make quite as good a story, does it, Lee? Thanks for calling.
Dude, you want some Litswid?
They were under the influence of Litswid the whole time. Dom.
I heard that Terry Kath, the original guitar player for Chicago, who shot himself with a pistol, did so playing Russian roulette. Did your guests ever hear anything about that?
I don't know the details on this, but I believe that is correct.
That's the story I had heard also.
Yeah, it's not something I've researched more thoroughly, but that's one of the two like rock and roll Russian roulette incidents.
What's the other one?
Johnny Ace, famous for Pledging My Love, ballad singer in the 50s. It was always a matter of debate whether, you know, he'd actually had been playing Russian roulette or whether, sort of a music industry thug had shot him. It turns out it was probably just him screwing around with the gun. He sort of was waving it around, and he wasn't being careful, and he shot himself.
Sorry, John. Thanks for calling. Speaking of music industry thugs shooting people, have you figured out who killed Tupac Shakur yet?
I'm afraid not.
Don't have that?
If I had that one, that'd be a whole book by itself.
Yes, it would. All right, let's talk about band names.
Sure.
There are plenty of explanations for band names that are a little bit too sexual for us to go into. Steely Dan, 10cc, et cetera.
Yep.
But where do you come up with the name the Foo Fighters? Who's going around the world fighting Foo?
Foo Fighters is what people during World War II called UFOs, basically. It was a nonsense term that came from this comic strip called Smokey Stover. And it was, they were also called Kraut Fireballs, and it was just a term of the era. Dave Grohl, who did Foo Fighters, was just really into all of that UFO stuff, was a big X-Files fan, and, sort of called his record label Roswell Records, from where the alien landing allegedly was. And so that's where he got the names.
Yeah, there are some all-time great rock and roll band names. In fact, it got to a point where, after a while, I think you could put together any words. once you have a band called Toad the Wet Sprocket and Squirrel Nut Zippers, pretty much the gates have been shot wide open, haven't they?
There was an indie band a couple of years ago that just, I always thought was a wonderful name. Sorry About Dresden.
I remember a band, and I want to say this was maybe 1979 or 1980. Again, I was working in rock radio at the time, and it was at a time when you had the Cars and the Doors and the Eagles and a lot of bands that started with the.
Yep.
They called themselves the.
Yes. Yeah, a one-man band, Matt Johnson. Not a bad band, not my favorite, but the funny thing is they're just about impossible to Google now.
I bet you get every entry on Google if you just put in the.
Yeah, what's going to come up?
One other band name, and then we'll go back to the calls here in a moment. Pearl Jam. I may be sorry I'm asking you this, but where's that from?
Some people have actually suggested there's a sexual connotation to it, but that's not what it is. It's sort of the band sort of took it as like, sort of like the grain of conflict that makes a pearl is also sort of like the grain of conflict that makes creativity and makes the band.
Okay. And Jim has a band name question for you. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
I'm calling
about the band Wang Chung.
Yes.
Yes, everybody have fun tonight. Everybody, Wang Chung tonight.
It's a rare band that manages to make their name into a verb.
It is. The story that I've heard over the years is that Wang Chung is the sound of an unplugged electric guitar.
I have to be straight. I don't know the answer to this one, but I'm actually curious now that you're asking, and I'm going to look into it.
Not to be confused with Ka-Chung, which was the sound of The Current Affair. And Maury Povich told me that he gave it that name because he was married to Connie Chung, and so Ka-Chung just made him feel like he was completely at home with that. Jim, I'm glad you called. Gavin, hold on. We'll be back in just a moment here with more from Gavin Edwards from Rolling Stone. The book is Tiny Dancer Really Elton's Little John? Talking with Gavin Edwards from Rolling Stone magazine, who's compiled some of the urban legends that he's written about over the years in the world of rock and roll into a new book called His Tiny Dancer Really, Elton's Little John. During the commercials, Gavin, my producer, Trevor, told me that he had heard that Pearl Jam had originally wanted to name their band Mookie Blaylock.
That's true.
After the NBA player.
Yes, and he didn't give them permission. Everyone involved agreed that it was probably for the best that it hadn't happened that way. I also did a little quick research during the commercial break, and it appears that Wang Chung comes from the Chinese for perfect pitch. Mm.
Everybody have perfect pitch tonight? Just doesn't sound as good, does it? Let me ask you about CDs, which have been around for, I guess, almost a quarter of a century now.
That's about right, yeah.
When they first came out, we were told, oh, indestructible.
Forever.
Yeah, and then after that we heard, oh, no, not indestructible. They'll disintegrate in about 25 years.
Yep.
Do I have to worry about the first CDs I bought?
Maybe. Probably by the time they're falling apart on you, you'll have moved on to something else, though. You know, they're pancakes, essentially, and they're pressed together, and it depends how good care you're taking care of them. If you leave them around in your car and they get overheated, if you let them get scratched up, you know, they're not going to make it. They're not as indestructible as we were told. But, you know, sort of, you know, at a certain point, nobody cares that their 78s are getting warped because they don't listen to them anyway.
Because we're all onto the iTunes age now.
Exactly. So, you know, you might want to take good care of them and then, you know, sort of like rip them onto your iPod or what have you. But they'll probably last you long enough.
I still have some old vinyl records at home.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
I mean, that technology is still around, although I'll be honest with you, I rarely put them on.
You know, I've got some things that it's just really hard to find anyplace else, but, you know, time goes on, it gets hard to get the record needles, you know, it's just, it doesn't work the way it used to.
Well, I think as long as rap stays popular, there'll always be turntables around, because that's how they're scratching them. Although now they're doing digital scratching, so that may go away soon. Let's go back to the phones.
Whoever thought that you'd be looking back to, like, sort of, back when there was just sort of basic scratching, like, that's a lost art now.
Let's go back to the phones. Jay, hi.
Hello?
Hi, Jay.
Yes, I have a question about Bobby Fuller of I Fought the Law of Fame. I had an album once that was like a compilation, and it was like he died under some really mysterious circumstances, and they didn't accept the way he was died. And do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I know enough to tell you that the real answer isn't out. Like, there's sort of it was in L.A., and there was a weird thing with the LAPD. Sort of a friend of a friend actually did a lot of research into this and decided not to publish, that, like, it was still a touchy subject. So, you know, he wouldn't tell me, but I know that it's actually one of those unsolved mysteries that's still out there.
Gavin, we've only got a minute or so left. Tell me a couple of your favorites.
A couple of my favorites one is that I never knew that the film director David Lynch and Jay Giles, lead singer Peter Wolf, were roommates in college.
Okay.
That, you know, they, like, had bunk beds together. One of my favorites was finding out that Stevie Wonder for a while had no sense of smell.
What?
Yeah, he got in a car crash in his early 20s. He wasn't driving, obviously. And you know, the car smacked into a logging truck. He took a log in the face, and for a while he lost his sense of smell and his sense of taste, which, you know, you're down to four senses, and then all of a sudden you're down to two. It's really got to hurt. But
did he get him back in another car crash?
Luckily for him, they came back gradually.
All right, one last question for me, again from my years in rock radio.
Uh-huh.
Gunther Gleben Glausen Globen. I don't remember the name of the Def Leppard song. I know it was on the Pyromania album.
Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Yep.
What the heck is Gunther Gleben Glausen Globen?
You know, the band's been told that it means it's German for going through the forest silently, but what actually was going on was their producer, Mutt Lange, who went on to marry Shania Twain, they're in the studio and he's sort of doing count-offs for, like, okay, here's where the guitars come in. One, two, three, four. And then he starts doing it with, like, Indian food. Papadum, papadum. And then, you know, they're all getting very tired and punchy, and to count off, he goes, Gunther Gleben Glausen Globen, and it cracked them up so much they put it at the beginning of the song.
That's a good one to end with, then. The book is a very fun read. It's called Is Tiny Dancer Really Elton's Little John? And we've only touched on about 10% of what he's got in here. Music's Most Enduring Mysteries, Myths, and Rumors Revealed. Gavin, thanks for your time today. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure.